our speakers are David Lacko and Aaron Leon. They will be talking about the use of digital tools for language revitalization. Yeah, please get started.
Hi there, my name is David Lacko. I am a graduate student at UBC Okanagan.
My name is Aaron Leon. I am the current president of the board of directors of the Splatoon Chemisultan Teaching Society, and also kind of like the head tech archivist, teacher helper person. So, yeah.
Jack of all trades.
Yeah.
The title of our presentation is From Archives to Hybrid Realities, Feeling, Seeing, and Hearing the Language on Screen. So first, I'd like to situate ourselves. So the Splatoon First Nation is, Splatoon means the mouth of the prairie. So the land of the Suquamish people, who Splatoon are part of the Suquamish Nation, is a vast territory in eastern British Columbia, from an area called the Arrow Lakes, north to Quesnel, British Columbia, roughly bounded on the west by the Fraser River in BC, and to the east by the Rocky Mountains on the Alberta-BC border. The Splatoon First Nation is the southernmost member of the Suquamish Nation, and their reserves are located next to Enderby, British Columbia, along the Shuswap River, and the earliest ethnographic accounts of Splatoon can be found in James Alexander Tate's The Shuswap, published as part of the Jesuit North Pacific Expedition directed by anthropologist Franz Boas. Today, Splatoon community members practice traditional hunting and fishing along the riverway and often hold culture camps for sharing traditional knowledge. In fact, the Shuswap River is central to the community members' lives, and according to anthropologist Tad McIlrath, it forms a Splatoon social hub during many months of the year, and Splatoon people gather there on river beaches and camps along the river, and it's a travel corridor, a place for spiritual activities and cleansing rituals, and where horses are watered. And it's the aesthetic center of the Splatoon culture, where it forms a central component of traditional stories and oral stories. So the language of the Splatoon people is an Eastern dialect of Suquamish-Chin, the Shuswap language of the Interior Salish language family. When considering all of the dialects of Suquamish-Chin, the language as a whole has about 1,190 speakers, semi-speakers, although Splatoon's Suquamish-Chin dialect is further endangered because less than 1% of 800 band members are speakers. In 2014, this was about 8 speakers that understood Suquamish-Chin fluently, all of whom were over the age of 65, and this number has decreased since this language survey has taken place.
Yeah, now we have about maybe 3 elders that we work with, compared to 7, even like a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. So, some of the stuff that we do with technology and documentation work is things like documenting the residential school era, which was the era where our people were taken from our reserves and our families and put into residential schools, and the language was forced out of them, and a lot of shame and anxiety towards the language was put into them. So one of the things that we've done with this is we've done a documentary, There's a Truth to Be Told, about the effects that has had on our community. Yeah. The 60 Scoop was just the era where the kids were forcibly removed from the reservation and, yeah, put into residential school. I'll talk about the Splatoon Chemisultan. We are a nonprofit organization that's based around teaching the language and culture. It kind of started as we needed a kind of an ECE, a daycare center for everybody, but then as our needs grew, we started teaching the language more and kind of basing it off of like a traditional home where we'd bring in the elders to teach the children and while giving care for both the elders and the children, so kind of creating that intergenerational transmission of knowledge, as well as recording and documenting the language with the elders and having them talk in fluent sentences and documenting all that so we can have, yeah, good archival material.
And as you can see in this picture, there's elders and the children, this Shmamalt, who are working directly with the elders, learning the language. It's not the clearest picture, but that's what's happening.
Yeah, using like curriculum, can't really see there, but the All Made Sons, Wasas, and they're kind of talking about the different times of the day, different weather, and all that kind of thing.
So I first met the Squatching Kia'a, the grandmothers, in a class with Dr. Christine Schreier, where we played Where Are Your Keys? So the Kiki'as came all the way down to UBC Okanagan from Enderby, and they learned how to play Where Are Your Keys for language revitalization. And then for my master's project, Kia'a Rosalind Williams, who is Aaron's grandmother, invited me to come and actually build a video game to help with the language revitalization that was going on there. So our goal is to conduct research that will inform the production of the video game in a collaborative framework that builds on individual abilities and expertise in the community. That's Aaron and I just working away. So elsewhere, Aaron and I have explained the importance of technology for language revitalization, highlighting Leslie Thornton Wyman's concept of linguistic survivance as the continuous use and practices of language in light of processes of globalization. Many Indigenous groups are challenging overarching globalization theories and are calling for the importance of context in describing processes of globalization. And Aaron and I have previously demonstrated that the use of technology in Indigenous communities is often tied to the process of reclaiming identity, decolonization, and self-determination. This is the case for the Squatching Chimek Sultan, as they use technology for many of their language revitalization programs. For example, many of their, a lot of their work is on YouTube. And for example, this is the Sutlach Kia'a song, which all of the children learn, everyone at the center learn, to say goodbye to the Kia'as when they're leaving. There'll be a link to the YouTube video and the
So a lot of the lesson plans that we kind of create, we try to record as much and document as possible, and in that we put together videos that help teach the language. And the Sutlach Kia'a song is kind of a nice song because it helps transition the kids out of the room so that they kind of leave in a nice fashion, because they can get pretty crazy sometimes.
So the Chimek Sultan has been using technology to revitalize the language, and it's a great strength of the society. By claiming the way that technology is used to represent the language and culture of Squatching, it builds healthy identities intergenerationally, confidence in language skills, and the capacity for learners to take on responsibility for their own language learning. Technology in this way is crucial in shifting a colonial agenda, specifically of residential schools and the 60s scoop, by favoring Sequimic worldviews in new media technologies. So despite the negative effects of colonialism and globalization on language stability and endangerment, the Squatching First Nations language revitalization practices are gaining momentum. And when thinking about globalization through the lens of global connections arising from the exchange of worldviews, products and ideas and other aspects of culture, it's quite easy to imagine that these factors would negatively influence the status of language and endangerment. The work done at the Squatching Chimek Sultan enables us to rethink the idea that the products of globalization, such as mass media and technology, are displacing or disenfranchising minority language groups. And this isn't to discount the fact that globalization has and continues to have negative effects on communities throughout the world, but this is to say that despite these negative effects, the Squatching First Nations language revitalization practices are gaining momentum. And so, did you want to explain this book?
Just another thing about the use of YouTube and everything is we don't have a lot of time and a lot of resources, so it helps us distribute our lesson plans for everybody to listen to and learn. And this is just kind of a phrase we made up with our Silent Speakers program, Splachina Ma Sequim Nab, and it's just a phrase that we like to help empower ourselves in learning the language.
I wanted to share this clip of Rosalind Williams, Aaron's grandmother.
And for myself, it's like medicine. It's like knowing and understanding the language creates a feeling of well-being. So it's like being able to connect with our ancestors through the language. That connection creates a sense of well-being for me. To that language, we don't really know how old it is, but it's like it's a connection to my inheritance as a Sohepmuk person. It's that connection that creates a sense of well-being.
Really powerful quote from Rosalind. So the Sepahcheh and Chemung Sultan is building a digital archive for their Sepahcheh dialect. They're working with the Kikia'a, the grandmothers, and members of the Chemung Sultan, and they're contributing to and learning the language and using digital tools for documentation and conservation. The archive serves as a resource for constructing corpus for language revitalization.
In this photo, it's kind of a new initiative we've done thanks to the Silent Speakers Project is we've been giving out these kind of recorders to our elders, to our language learners, so they can go out with their mentors and record the mentors and kind of keep on listening and training their ear and helping that. And then also kind of maybe even researching, because there are sometimes conversations that I won't be able to access just because of my age or my gender or something like that, or I just don't know them as well. So in that way, we can kind of help, I guess, research a bit more.
So entries to the archives also involves recorded performance of daily activities, including play, cooking, exploring the Sepahcheh territory, and the archive includes traditional ecological knowledge, such as the use of plants, or can include documenting genealogy of Sepahcheh community members. So here we have Marie David saying a phrase for children, common phrases in the Chemung Sultan, and we have on the other side Tukulalsa, that is a choke cherry leaf. And so the videos, once edited, are uploaded online on the Chemung Sultan's website, and such videos in other communities are known to contribute to the sense of well-being of community members and of language revitalization practices. Here are some cards that we built in September that we share with the community, and that's the complete published works of the Sepahcheh and Chemung Sultan of their work.
And other resources.
The community has worked extensively with First Voices to provide a community portal. Language learners can use this First Voices to supplement their language learning and to access dictionaries, games, and other information about the language and culture of Sepahcheh.
Mm-hmm. And besides this being a dictionary, one of the things that we think is a little bit unique of how we approach First Voices is that for each of the words, we recorded the speaker saying it, so you can see the mouth movement. And thanks to Heather Bliss, we recently did some ultrasounds with one of our speakers. So now we can have an overlay of how the mouth moves in understanding how to say the words. Because sometimes that's really hard to work out, as everybody knows.
So another project involves the installation of QR codes around the territory so that language learners can use mobile phones for learning Sepahcheh. This media can change the way that we see space. Our reality is augmented by this form of media as handheld technology facilitates combining the real and digital information into a user's view. The potential to use mobile phones in place-based learning on the territory contributes to a reconceptualization of this space. Since no longer are the region necessarily a physical space, but can be entirely virtual or a combination of virtual and physical. So this example of the use of QR codes is actually used in the phonology class that occurs at the Sepahcheh and Chemung Sultan. That's taught by Christine Schreier here. And so these were handed out to community members so that they could practice making the sounds at home. So if you scanned one of these, it would take you directly to the First Voices website and to an audio clip of that sound being used.
So the potential is almost endless, because I know a lot of people have all these data resources, data pools, and they're up somewhere. We have kind of built it into First Voices. So being able to throw that technology and that resource into the community where people can easily access it when it's not as accessible, as some people pointed out in the last presentation, that First Voices is a little bit not the easiest to navigate, it helps a lot.
We're also making a video game. So members are turning to creative ways of disseminating the language. One such project involves a video game for learning Sipamucin. So research has shown that games can be used to introduce players to differing, unfamiliar worldviews and in a safe environment where the risk and place of failure is low, and mitigating the risks that might accompany these types of experiences in real-world contexts allows players to learn new ways of and understand the world, new critical lenses from which to analyze and reinterpret their reality, and to explore ideas about the construction and potential to reimagine identity. And this quote from Aaron actually demonstrates this really well.
I don't want to read my
own
quote.
But it essentially says that in Aaron's words.
I said that.
And so this is a concept art for the video game. It's in development right now. It's based on Tweetamus.
Mm-hmm. I explained a little bit earlier about the 60 Scoop, and the 60 Scoop was how that traumatized a lot of our speakers. And all that kind of thing. Really horrible. And one of the ways that we wanted to deal with that and kind of explain that history was through a play called Tweetamus, which was kind of a retelling of that story, as well as some of our spectacula, our stories that have morals and our teaching stories, really. It was like intertwining of that. It was a huge success, brought all the community out, and it was a really nice piece of writing. So we wanted to kind of grow that a bit more. So we look towards the area of video games as like a way to explore that narrative a bit more thoroughly. And yeah, to create a safe space for people to learn, and also to something that our community can show off as being like, this is us, this is our community, this is something that we are about and can share that with people.
So while the Kikia contribute their invaluable time, voices, and knowledge to the digitization projects, other community members are contributing their time and resources by editing and publishing the digital media. In this sense, new forms of socialities are emerging within the community due to the production, circulation, and consumption of digital language media. Here we are concerned with rethinking language revitalization in terms of new forms of socialities that emerge from the use of technology. Pink et al. Defined socialities as the qualities of social relationships. It is an open concept to recognize that social relations between people are multiple, can be fluid, and change at different rates. This recognizes individual experiences and practices that emerge from the use of technology. We are also interested in the study of virtuality, as defined by Bonnie Nardi, as including the affordances of technology of the virtual and how they are mingled with and affect human activity. As new patterns and forms of digital-mediated lives emerge, new forms of socialities arise, and the qualities of social relationships change. The work at the Splatchin Chemek Sultan involves blurring the lines between the virtual and the digital, the virtual and what some would actually call actual offline, or as Jennifer Kuhl states, on ground, as a way to acknowledge how networked media is actually intrinsically integrated into the lives of community members. And I think a perfect example of this is when I was sick, I was helping out with some language revitalization and revision of some of the work that had been done previously. I fell ill, but I was still able to do it from Kelowna in my living room over Skype with the Kikia'a, with the grandmothers there. So there's Rosalind, Kikia'a Rosalind, and Kikia'a Emmeline. So in conclusion, in a community that has embraced the digitization of cultural and linguistic resources, digital production and dissemination of language demonstrates the importance of describing community-based uses of technology in discussing media and globalization in indigenous communities. here are some examples of some of the community members doing that work.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd like to say, Kukshjalp, thank you all for coming. And just this is an example, a picture from the winter feast that happened in the community, a ceremony, and it was their paper lanterns that were lighting the way on the path. And yeah, that's where we'll end it. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have 10 minutes for questions.
I have a really quick question. Because you mentioned that you're utilizing QR codes in the community.
Mm-hmm.
So in my head, that means you're kind of, I'm just wondering, are you actually like just, you know, kind of going along the community and like stickering up the town?
That's the plan, is wherever kind of on... like bathroom doors, water fountains, tables.
Because at the Tim McSullivan, we have a cultural yard, which is kind of like a fenced-in play area that's outdoors. So that's it's like a safe play area. And through there, we had signs for all the different like plants and all the, I guess, flora there. So that's what was kind of the initial thing that we did that. And we were like, well, let's just stick QR codes on that and just keep on growing that.
I just really like that idea.
Yeah,
like
it's
in my head, you're just
yeah.
like gorilla
tagging with the QR codes. Yeah. Oh, the best part about it is that QR codes are also free to make. So if you have a printer and some stickers, you can print on some stickers, some QR codes, stick them around, gorilla QR codes.
Also, cell phone internet is usually faster than any internet we can get on a reserve. So, yeah.
Technology are you using for the game stuff you're
doing? So we're building it on Unity 3D.
Okay.
The assets, that we're, so like the game objects, all of the characters and everything are going to be purchased just because we're a small team.
Yeah.
We don't have 3D modelers on our team or artists, unfortunately.
Not yet, anyways.
Not yet, anyways. So it's a small team, so it's a small project. But yeah, it's being built on Unity. Unity is free to use. There's quite a steep learning curve for how to use it, but fortunately, it's free to use for personal use, and then when you actually go to license later on, you can deal with the licensing issues then. There are great tutorials online for how to do video games. Yeah.
I am teaching my son my language. But he comes out of his bedroom speaking Japanese because he's watching anime.
Yeah.
Have you guys considered like anime type thing? Showing situations?
That was kind of the idea behind this. Is like the more media that we can kind of affect that people use, the more we can kind of maybe rope people in to wanting to learn the language and open them up and be more available to it. It's just kind of like when people immigrate here and learn English, a lot of them use TV and stuff like that. So it's kind of like affecting the media so that we can bring speakers. Yeah.
You mentioned that you had videos and sonograms. Are they easily accessible that you can demonstrate now? Or?
Not yet.
Not
we have videos, but not the sonograms.
So yeah, if you just Google the on YouTube, the /Ancient McSultan, there's a YouTube page with a lot of language learning material on there.
I think there is a video somewhere.
It was downstairs at
lunch. Yeah. We recently just did this.
Yeah.
So we're going to be acquiring that media pretty soon and putting it into all of our other stuff.
But Heather Bliss's poster, digital poster downstairs, demonstrates Kia. Emmeline Felix, who you saw in the Skype picture, and you can see an ultrasound of her tongue moving in that.
It looks amazing.
So for the video game that you guys are making, is it just written language, or you also have audio files in the game that you
have? Oh, very good question.
We have audio files. Here's a great picture of this.
Of recording the audio files.
Yeah, of us recording the audio files. So I kind of skipped over this. But there is Kia Annie Cook, and she, we, th- This was going to a surplus store, picking up the materials that we could find to create an audio box to get the most crisp recordings possible.
Yeah.
So her face in that is inside of the box, it's foam.
Doesn't look too good, but...
But the recordings... So one of the things is that to get these solid, crisp recordings that you need for a video game is really difficult to get at a daycare.
Yeah.
So building something like this is actually really important. And then also, it's surprising, all of the halogen lights
mm-hmm.
and the fridge and all that stuff. But this simple $25 contraption helped us out quite a bit on that.
Mm.
So,
but the game will be mostly based in the language.
Okay.
But there are parts of, like, in the story Tweet to Miss, it is about a guy coming back out of the foster care system to his reserve. So he's speaking English, relearning his past. So in those scenes, there will be English.
So the characters in the game will be speaking in the
cool.
languages that you guys want
mm-hmm.
to analyze. Okay, great.
Mm.
That's cool.
Definitely.
I'm going to ask the same nerdy data management question
mm-hmm.
that I asked Christine during her presentation. You guys have all of these different files, different formats. Are you storing them all together, or do you just have a directory structure? How do you keep track of everything and access it?
This is something like everybody has been saying there. Just, I don't know, just keep consistent with what you do.
So you have it stored in like a directory structure and folders?
Yeah. And my basic go-to for everything is the based on physical media, like whether it's audio, document, or something like that, break it down into those. And then file names, just year, date, then the title, and then keywords afterwards.
And the standards for like the recordings and everything are based off of the UBC Vancouver's Museum of Anthropology?
The digitization program. They have a lot of accessible, easy-to-use like standards and stuff. So. Yeah, and then we store everything on like a QNAP server that's backed up, and we rotate those backups like weekly, store one offsite, so it's safe.
Did you guys ever consider making a language app?
We are creating like a curriculum-based language app to help our teachers and kind of help track progress through that. That was, and then we, with the first voices, we are going to have a dictionary app coming out soon. Yeah, but yeah, still
that
accessible.
That was one of the ways we've just created one in ours, and it
yes.
just really engaged our younger kids, because that's, I mean, they're constantly on their phone. We're telling them in class, you know, we've got to put it away, so we're like, well, how do you utilize it
mm-hmm.
in a positive way? So
mm-hmm.
it's got like 500 yeah. phrases,
nice.
All the smaller like nouns, recordings, audio, all of that.
Yeah, that's what the First Voices site acts for us. So, yeah.
Any more questions? Thank you for the talk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for this.